For May the 15th, 2015, we talk about the Bloodstained Kickstarter, Killzone Mercenary, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to the 104th level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Meismith.
My name is Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Dennis is running behind, and we're going to add him in when he hops on here shortly, I imagine. Let's wait and see, I suppose. But the train keeps rolling, I suppose.
You would not be a confident conductor, Cole.
Okay, so we're doing train analogies tonight?
Is that what we do? Is it like the offhanded thing that I throw out at the front? Is that the inadvertent theme?
Yeah, I'll jump on the train.
I feel like that's kind of how that works.
Yeah, and that sound is the text message of Dennis saying he will be here soon, I guess. Yeah.
No, it's like after, within 5 minutes of the start of the episode, you try to change the subject matter, but that train's already departed.
I suppose, yeah. I really don't have this one. I'm running out of steam on it, so I can't really continue.
How about we segue to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? That's something you can get behind.
I just hung up those pictures above my bed. I've posted pictures of these before.
Is that like the Richard Scarry book? Because that's what that sounds like.
No, David. Sorry, I'm so baffled that I can't even say your actual name, David. You've never seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
No.
Oh my God! Wow. Okay. Huh. That is a late 80s John Hughes movie that stars Steve Martin and John Candy. It is a
So this is on my Amazon Video.
Maybe, yeah. Like it's also probably on that thing that on that list of things that Cole thinks is important, but is actually only like memorable to or notable for people who are as out of touch as he is.
I find that list actually fairly entertaining. So
I guess, yeah. But I'm this asshole who has expectations that people will know this shit, and then I express bafflement when they haven't seen.
How the hell am I supposed to allude if you don't know what I'm alluding to?
Well, that's not so much an allusion as it is us just saying the name of this movie in reference to these pictures I have.
Shut up! I did do that well in English.
What were you going to say, Ben?
Freaking
I'm surprised you guys have known one another as long as you have, and you haven't forced Money Smith to watch it yet.
It's not one of those things that I'm like, I'm going to sit you down and force, like, you know, I forget who it was, but like who led the charge to make sure that Dennis watched The Big Lebowski at his bachelor party? Like
that was kind of a group.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know, but like that is something that I will actually sit somebody down to do. I guess I try to imagine that Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is just in the air, you know, because
at least one of those things is in the air,
except for those vacuum trains, which right. in nowhere. Yeah.
No, but, I honestly though, part of it is, this will come across like I'm being down on Cole, and I totally don't mean it that way, but like Cole and I, generally speaking, have really, really different tastes in movies. So usually like one of my kind of rules of thumb is that I tend not to watch movies he really likes just because we tend to have such wildly divergent tastes.
I mean, is that just because you like kung fu action movie kind of things? And
I think a lot of it is part of it also is it seems like I like one genre I explicitly dislike it would be like dark comedies, and okay. It seems like that's one that it would be one of the more prominent ones you do like. if that makes sense.
I guess maybe. I don't know. Like, it's hard for me. The thing you would call a dark comedy, I would probably just call it comedy. So it's hard for me to.
Sure. And to be fair, I actually don't like comedy in general. that just, much because I am
the point
psychopath.
Emerges.
Yeah, which is like that's one of those things. It's like on an episode of Watch Out for Fireballs a long time ago, Gary let slip that he doesn't like the sound of a child's laughter. it's like okay, this is like a staggeringly different worldview, which I wouldn't take away for the, you know, like I wouldn't take that away from anybody, but also it just seems like saying I don't like this incredibly fundamental thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, like I don't know if it's I don't like I will say, you know, definitely, for example, Airplane is an exception. Like, there are exceptions, but...
I mean, do you just,
I think
like,
some of it's just... So many of its subgenres I just despise.
I mean, do you not like filth? Do you, like, are you... Like, do you not like, body humor? B-A-U-D?
Not particularly, no.
Body humor, which is the opposite of body horror.
Yes. That doesn't do a whole lot for me. Romantic comedy makes me want to kill people.
So along with that, how do you feel about, like, say, Shaun of the Dead? Like, I mean, like the whole zombie fatigue thing aside, like you talking about how you don't like zombies in media or whatever.
Sure. But overall, Grant, like I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through. I think I've seen it from like shortly before them like chucking records at zombies through like them trying to figure out how to fire a gun at a bar. It's like the chunk of the movie I've seen.
That's like a bulky portion of it.
Yeah. Okay. You got most of it.
Yeah.
All right. So overall, I actually enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really liked. I realized this is. I could see people like saying that I missed the point of this movie or whatever. I really liked Hot Fuzz, except for like the murder scenes, which were a little too gory for my taste.
Yeah, I could see that. How about The World's End?
I haven't seen that. It looks good, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that one's my favorite. The reason. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say really.
Yes.
Elaborate.
I like it the most. Like. I don't know what more to say about it. Like, comedy is definitely subjective, but like I feel like that one has the most like a little bit, maybe the most heart to it, and then it is also the saddest. The reason that I ask about that they ask about Shaun of the Dead, and I realize we're going on way too long, killing time for Dennis to come in. But the reason that I ask is like that could be, you know, taken as like a genre mashup between zombie film and like romantic comedy.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to try and slip that one in the side door, I guess.
Yeah, I know.
My sounds kind of like that too.
My issue with like romantic comedy is just I don't know. I think it's my cynicism. I think the romance stuff in that is usually crap.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan. Like, it'd be hard for me to like come out and say like, ooh, this is a romantic comedy that like really does it, you know, for me. Like, I can't say I'm a huge fan of one or the other. Like, I guess, you know, Sleepless in Seattle's okay for like what it is and all the sins that happened later because of it. But yeah. I can't.
Punch-Drunk Love is good.
That can you like? Do P.T. Anderson movies have genre?
Well, I mean, with that one, I would consider that to have both elements of romance and comedy in it, but I wouldn't call it a romantic comedy. I guess,
yeah, I suppose. Like the more interesting thing about that to me, like than the romance story, is just the vignettes about how emasculated that guy is. I forget the character's name.
Barry Egan. What's your name? Yeah, anyway.
And also his interactions with Philip Seymour Hoffman. But
yeah.
Yeah. But this has been Movie Chat.
So I feel like maybe what we've actually said is David just doesn't know enough about comedy to know if he likes comedy. Maybe that's the take home message here.
It's one of those it's one of those subjective things. You know when you see it. But to provide context for why that came up or why I dove into it so heavily, I have three pictures of toy vehicles: a plane, a train, and an automobile. And I always hang them in that order above my bed. So I am a gigantic dork. Let's see here. It looks like Dennis is on, so I'm going to add him. Hey, Dennis.
Hello.
Hey. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Glad to join.
Yeah, you caught us right as we are about to go to, the body of the show, where we do the big three, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And let's go right ahead to the brief, where we talk about news in the gaming world around us and such as regards events. I forget the sequence of words that I say that starts that, so I will just go ahead and roll into it and ask, does anybody have a story they would like to volunteer? Okay, then I have one. Okay, well, I will do a story to get us started.
Break the ice.
Yeah, I will do that. So you guys see this Kickstarter thing where people are giving money for stuff that, you know, well, you'll see. No, this the Castlevania Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Igarashi, I believe Keiji Igarashi, I think is his name. Koji Igarashi, there we go. I feel bad for not saying that correctly. He is no longer with Konami, and this is the guy who was kind of behind a lot of the better-known kind of Metroidvania Castlevanias over the past, several years, mostly on the DS. Go ahead.
So is this the good Castlevania or the one that Dennis likes?
This is prior. Hey. The one that Dennis platinumed? Yes. No. This is, I need to check and make sure that I am speaking with authority on which Castlevanias he was working on. But the side-scrolling ones that are in the vein of Symphony of the Night, right? So he was assistant director on a Symphony of the Night, and then from then onward he was producer, scenario writer. Like, he was kind of a leading force and a guiding hand in what, you know, in structuring those games like that. And so they put out this Kickstarter for a game called Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night, which real subtle, guys, with a $500,000 goal, and they managed to rake in at least as of the time that we're recording. I will do a refresh on this page to see what comes back up. $1,639,149 with 31 days to go.
Wow.
Yes.
What are the rewards they're offering?
The rewards that they're offering, I didn't really look because I just kind of skimmed the lowest ones to see what I would have to donate to get a copy of the game.
Well, that was going to be my question. Is that number representative of like Kickstarter backers, or is that like the total lifetime sales of this game?
I mean, who knows? Like, this is basically pre-orders, right? At this point, like, they've got a $5 tier, and that jumps all the way up to $28 to get a digital copy of the game, and then $60 and up. That's where like a physical copy of the game happens. The tiers go up as high as $10,000. There's one person who did a $7,500 one where you get a one-of-a-kind silver ring handcrafted by Iga himself. Yeah.
That's a little random.
Yeah, well, you know, the video for this is great. It's really off the wall. They're really upfront with kind of the way that this is structured and why they're doing it this way, which is, big publishers, they don't want to fund this kind of game. Something 2D and, you know, kind of small like that. They don't think that there's demand for it.
Because, I mean, pixelated games haven't been selling.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're talking about big publishers. But he comes out and says, "Yep, you know what? We have private funding that is in the works, but what we're trying to do is demonstrate that there is interest and there is a market for this." And this is kind of like a couple of other Kickstarters that have been put out, like that one by the Banjo-Kazooie team, the ukulele game that got funded pretty quickly as well, saying, "Here's what we're trying to do is, you know, get enough to demonstrate interest and get this other funding, but also anything above and beyond the goal is going into these stretch goals, which will just make the game better." Right.
So do they have stretch goals like all the way up to like 1 bazillion or whatever they got?
They have it up to 2 million, which I'm positive that they're going to have crossed that by the time this episode comes out, which is like a boss rush mode kind of thing. Like a bunch of these are, at 850,000, it was voice acting by David Hayter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
See, so some of these like crazy successful Kickstarters, I sometimes wonder if they reach a point where it's like, seriously, guys, we don't know what to add to this game.
Well, and that's good. Like, if they say, okay, here's everything that we can possibly, you know, scope for this, and then just cut it off, then that is a good thing, right? Like, you don't want to run into a Star Citizen where the inmates are running the asylum.
Right. Just mm-hmm. have the last stretch goal just says Ferrari.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if it's Ferrari, that's okay. I don't like anything that kind of like that ventures into making fun of people who crowdfund for like drawing money from that to like live off of, you know, to like do a salary. Yeah. Like, although I guess a Ferrari is kind of outside of that. But yeah, this looks pretty cool. Like the video is really off the wall, and the graphics, the gameplay stuff that I've seen looks really good as well. Like, it is exactly the kind of thing that I've wanted, which is this high definition, you know, sprite art kind of stuff done in that style, just taking advantage of the HD display. Have you guys seen any of this?
I have not.
Oh,
but yeah, that flew under my radar.
I'm not big into the Castlevania series, though, so this doesn't hold a lot of water for me.
Dennis?
Yeah, I saw a headline about it, but I'm to the point where I just assume that there is a spiritual successor being kickstarted for literally every game out there.
Well, what is it?
Yeah,
like
you might say for the rest of us that it was like trains passing in the night.
God damn
or it. Planes passing in the night.
Not automobiles, though. That's totally different.
Nope.
They have lights on the front. Like... I don't know, this is the thing that's happening, right? Like, this pretty closely mirrors what was being done with Mighty No. 9, right? This mm-hmm. kind of visionary auteur behind this very well regarded series leaving the nest and turning to the crowd to make this happen outside of their big publisher. Like, it kind of seems like there's this diaspora happening.
So that begs the question, what will Hideo Kojima kickstart next?
Yeah, when are we going to get a Silent Hill Kickstarter?
I don't know. Like, they had that one for Clock Tower that didn't make its goal.
I'm still hoping for Solar Boy Django 3.
Solar Boy's Adventures in Jet Town or Moon Town?
Yes.
Was Titan Souls a Kickstarter project?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a good game.
Yeah, I won't say that it speaks negatively.
The one I read was kind of middling.
I mean, yeah, the reviews have been middling, but I think it's a good game.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah. I mean, obviously that doesn't, you know, disprove that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost this. Well, I was about to say it's kind of this like next step evolution in fan art, where you're making these like spiritual successor games is. Pretty involved, but then again, most of these spiritual successor games that we're talking about actually have the main people at the helm of them, so doesn't quite qualify as fan art.
The spirit is a person.
Yeah.
So speaking of fan art, sorry, I'm tangenting. I keep getting ads on Steam for a angry video game nerd movie. So is that like fan fiction for fan fiction? Like fan fiction of fan fiction?
No, I mean, that's just James Rolfe recognizing that that character has legs and people will pay money to see him act like that.
Okay. I've not followed up on any of this. That just struck me as like kind of unusual. I've not followed up on the it's a YouTube channel, right?
Angry Video Game Nerd.
It's just like a video series.
Yeah. I mean, it's that's one of those things that's been around for so long that I hesitate to call it a YouTube channel. Like that predates like modern YouTube culture,
okay.
Which is like he started that like in 2006, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
he's like the Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg of the internet.
At least of shouting about games. Yeah.
Nice. I'm going to have to check that out then.
I'm going to be honest. I only have the vaguest idea of what Angry Video Game Nerd is. I'm sure that I have watched like his stuff at some point, but I have no reference for it.
It is moments of kind of like very cogent analysis of how these very ill-advised NES games don't work. And like the frustrating moments and highlighting exactly why this thing is bullshit, kind of festooned in this overly shouty, overly like diarrhea obsessed persona. And that's just to my like it has made him a bunch of money, and so I can't really begrudge that kind of success. But like it kind of seems like he's kind of, you know, kind of trapped in that a little bit, because if you look at the other video, the other videos that he makes where he's not in that persona, just kind of like, oh, this is just like a really smart dude who is like, you know, savvy about kind of like media criticism and has a well-spoken way about him. And he just kind of has this, oh, it is buffalo diarrhea dripping into a rotting pig's separating chest wound. Like it's just overly gross kind of stuff.
Yeah, I still have no idea what it is.
It's a guy who plays bad games on video, and he talks into the camera, and it's cut back and forth, and there are you know, like characters and stuff inside of it. I don't watch enough other like YouTube video stuff to like give you a close comparison point.
No, that's fair. I am
Maddox, but confined to video games.
Yes.
I am equally as much commenting to one, just how inscrutable most internet stuff is, two, my complete apathy about it, and then three, my ignorance one there. So
yeah
I know it just it seems seems like a lot of the you know, let's plays and stuff like that, what I watch online, it seems like a lot of the people that do those like his videos. So that's been like my only exposure to it.
He's like, it's a foundational text a little bit, like a lot of, you know, a lot of the paths that people walk, he kind of cleared, you know, in a way.
Sure,
like
sure.
He was kind of the progenitor of the let's play video games and talk about them on camera kind of thing.
Sure.
So,
okay. Yeah. Cool.
I respect the man a tremendous amount. I just, his shtick kind of ran thin, and I wish he wasn't beholden to it.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, you got a story?
I do. I'm looking for I read this article early in the week, and I'm looking for the link to it. But basically, I'm going to take a step slightly outside of video games, even though there is a video game for this movie, to talk about a movie that is the first movie I've been excited to see in theaters for a long, long, long time.
Avengers 2, Age of Ultron.
Mad Max.
That includes Avengers that I've passed over. Yeah, Mad Max, Fury Road.
Awesome.
So I don't know.
Oh yeah,
why.
That looks amazing.
Yeah, and I don't know why it caught my attention initially. I think just the trailer had a certain panache that I liked, but I kind of started following it and getting more and more excited. And then just recently, it's kind of come out just more about the themes of the movie as well. That the director, who's the original director of the Mad Max, or the director of the original Mad Max films. Has kind of really taken a keen eye towards doing an action movie that does not carry with it all of the less than good action movie tropes. So specifically vis-a-vis kind of how female characters are portrayed in these kinds of movies. And so what you've got, at least from what I've been reading, is a movie that is a, you know, a great big, you know, huge action chase scene from one end to the other, and kind of really scratches that action movie itch. But at the same time has some very empowering things to say about through its female characters and their role. And so I've gotten more and more excited to see this movie as I've followed it. So yeah, all that to say, I have not been to a movie since well before Luke was born, and this will probably be the first one.
Is that out or?
It comes out on May 15th.
Thursday.
Thursday or Friday.
Yes,
one of those days.
Yeah, yeah. It comes out the day this episode comes out.
Yeah, good. So I know.
Go ahead.
Go on.
Somebody talk and just keep talking. God damn it.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
So I started out interested in the movie, and this is where I'll segue back to video games. Yeah. So the more I read about this movie, the more like cool stuff. Because not only, you know, does it have that angle to it, so that's good to hear. But then just hearing how they did some of the stunts and the way that they kind of approached the screenwriting or lack thereof for the movie was mm-hmm. very intriguing to me. But then I start looking at the video game, which as a rule, you know, video game tie-ins to movies are horrible. But this one looks to have a really, really cool, the way I described it to someone I was talking with this about on Twitter was, it looks like the vehicle parts from Jack 3 and the brawling parts from Uncharted, which has
that
me very excited
promising.
For anyone. Yeah, it sounds extremely promising. So not only does this look to be a movie that will be way better than I was expecting it to be, but it also looks to be a game that might be worthwhile as well.
Hmm. Like, that mix just makes it sound like you're talking about Arkham Knight.
Yeah, but, potentially. I have not followed Arkham Knight very closely, sorry. But the way I've always felt like the Arkham games was very... even though it was open world, it was all kind of within corridors within that open world.
Yeah.
And
they kind of
even
step
if you're driving,
away from that as they go.
Sure. Okay. Well, there you go. But you know, the Jack, cause literally in Jack 3, you are in a wasteland, which is, you know, fits very well with Mad Max, but it's incredibly open world and just, you know, you can drive in any direction. Mm-hmm. And it feels much more like, you know, riding a dune buggy around the wasteland than, racing through streets with any sort of guided path.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited to see more about both the movie and the game.
That was the one that they showed, this was at the PS4 reveal, right? Where they came out with this trailer and it was just a post-apocalyptic kind of like wasteland kind of thing. If you're like, oh, well, what's this going to be? There's no gameplay. It was just like a dude walking, and then I think he set a helmet down on a rock.
I'm imagining the same thing as Borderlands trailer, but with people.
Well, yeah, wasn't this the one where he, like, Angel of Mercy's the guy with the car?
Maybe. I think he does that, and then he puts a helmet down on a rock.
It felt like cashing in on Mad Max as if he was an action hero that was like front and center in everyone's mind versus someone that's been gone for 15 years or however long it's been.
He's back.
It was not a very self-aware movie.
Yeah.
Or self-aware
trailer. You obviously don't like steampunk.
I guess not well enough. Oh yeah. So it is a thing that I'm excited about, and especially in a medium that I've not been excited about for a long time.
Nice.
Yeah, I read the IGN review actually this morning, and they kind of going back to the portrayal of you know, the female lead in this. Their description was basically to say that effectively Max is a supporting character.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So and again, it's been very much you know, they've. And again, I haven't seen the movie, so we'll find out if they succeed. But they've attempted to kind of say, hey, let's do all the things that people love about action movies and just kind of quietly leave behind some of these nastier tropes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if they manage to make something different, like, I think that it's weird that the tone around this has been, why are they bringing that back? They're going to kill the franchise, et cetera, without recognizing that the, like, the main guy behind it is doing it.
Well, did they not see Beyond? No,
I haven't gotten that tone at all.
Yeah, I just yeah. Well, but like, I mean, just like that is generally the tone that happens whenever anything like this comes back, and like especially I think people had fondness for, you know, way back when, because you know the Mad Max movies were pretty good, and it's kind of like people were ignoring that the main guy was still involved.
Yeah. Well, I directing it, so not just involved, not just George Lucasing. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I was going to say, what about George Lucas? I feel like that kind of throws a wrench into that premise.
Okay.
No, but I just haven't been looking for it, but I haven't quite seen that negative reaction to it. Mm-hmm. And you know, it looks to be a statement of, hey, look, you can't have the best of both worlds in this.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be the opposite of Waterworld.
dry world. I'm so thirsty, damn it.
He's very thirsty.
Yes, everybody has to be like wrapped up in a still suit. Oh wait, we're just describing David? Dune. Dry world, it's Dune.
David, last week you were thinking of Seamus McO.
What?
Oh, okay.
Which were you trying to pull up a title?
Yes, from
I was referencing our generic XCOM Irishman.
Oh yeah, yeah. I forgot that was the origin of Seamus McO. Fun.
It's I tweeted about this as well. It always sucks when I have to miss recording an episode. But it is always fun to like have an episode that I haven't heard before.
Oh yeah,
to listen to, and it's this weird mix of like really, really enjoying listening to it, and then also like wanting to scream into my steering wheel, be like, "No, this is what you're thinking of. I know what you're talking about." It's like I listen to most podcasts that way, where like you know you're placing yourself in the conversation. That's part of the fun. But I also am used to and spoiled to usually be able to actively participate. So having that taken away is an extra layer of scream at your steering wheelness. So.
Dramatic irony. Yeah.
No, you fools. I couldn't have stopped this. I could have stopped you from embarrassing yourself. Oh, let's see here. Ben, what's your story? What's the deal with you?
So I wanted to talk about a game that I hadn't heard about before today. Have you guys heard of Lego Dimensions?
That is their answer to Skylanders, right?
I don't know what Skylanders is.
Well, yeah, or like the Amiibos, like they're like they're selling Lego toys with near field communication chips inside them, so that people can buy them and put the toys in the game, so they can play with them. Is that somewhat accurate?
It's Lego's device, so that people can pay more than the price of a game for a game.
Yeah.
But
I was really disappointed that Skylanders wasn't the next logical step in Highlander.
There can
Drylander. Be only one series, okay, David?
Drylander.
which in German is just Threelander. continue.
Yeah, so it's like an Amiibo-like game for Legos. The exciting part of it is they announced some of the things that they're adding on to it. Some of them are Doctor Who, Jurassic World, which people might like. They're also adding Portal 2 as one of the playable expansions to it, which piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're selling the Amiibos, it looks like, in packs of like two or three. And so for Portal 2, they have Chell, they have the Companion Cube, and they have a turret.
Hmm.
So I don't know. So that makes me more interested in the game. I don't know if I would pay full retail price, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it might be kind of cool to buy the toys and have a little Lego GLaDOS and Chell.
Yeah.
Like,
I
should also mention, they also have The Simpsons and Back to the Future as well.
Holy shit. Yeah. Talk about burying the lead. Jesus.
And Scooby-Doo. You know. And Jurassic World. And this is my what was a lead into a question, not a reaction.
Okay. you sounded so baffled. Like, wait,
what I was going to say is, what is it about Lego that allows it to license anything without ruining it. Like the majority of the time, licensed products are you know, horrible and don't live up to the thing that they are emulating. However, Lego just has this unique like ability to have Back to the Future Legos and the Simpsons Legos and Star Wars. Oh my God. I was in a bookstore the other day, the Lego Star Wars section of the bookstore, just like fiction that is Star Wars stories explicitly with Lego characters. No other reason to be Lego. That is an entire wall of books.
I was going to say, there can't be any dialogue in those books as well.
It's just a bunch of descriptions of gestures. Do you want me to give you the idealistic answer to that I have?
Okay. Sure.
So the everybody has a lot of collective goodwill toward Lego, especially creative people who may or may not be in a position to make decisions about how their like property is used. Like assuming that those deals are not handled at the dead-eyed businessman level. I think that just the fact that Lego is Lego and most of the people who are making cool stuff that may possibly be licensed, you know, have experience and goodwill toward Lego itself. I think that they just the reputation allows them to do whatever they want.
So Lego is the toy that all creative directors grew up playing with as kids.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah.
I was more of a Kinect kid, but you know.
As was I, but I also played both. I combined them in strange ways.
Ah. Yeah. Also, I now have the image of, you know, the new game, you know, Red Dead Businessman.
Oh yeah, there's a Red Dead Lego spinoff. So
it's really crazy. You wouldn't expect that, but yeah, Grand Theft Lego. Yeah,
they have that. It's called Lego City.
That could actually be kind of cool.
No, there is a video game for that.
Yeah,
Lego. There's a Lego video game that emulates Grand Theft Auto, and I'm blanking. I want to say it's Lego City. Maybe it's like Lego City Undercover or something like that.
Yeah, you know what? I think I remember this as well.
See, everything is Lego.
It's not bad.
The one that I think is most perplexing, because I feel like this is, you know, probably counts as recursion or something, is Minecraft Legos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are always more expensive than the other ones, I've noticed.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So I may end up buying a Portal one or also a Simpsons one. I don't know. Like all those things sound pretty cool. Not the game itself. I don't really care about the game. I just want the little dinguses.
I feel like were there air quotes around that when you said you may buy a Simpsons one?
No. Why? did I sound like I wasn't being genuine?
No. I feel like this is a foregone conclusion.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, it just depends on if I put myself in a position to buy one. Like, yeah. David, how about you? You got a story?
Sure. Kind of a quick one. Apparently, they've announced some of the voice cast for Batman Arkham Knight. And the main one I care about, by which I mean the only one I actually knew the person, was... John Noble, who played Walter Bishop in Fringe, which is amazing, is playing is voicing the Scarecrow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so nice. I don't know. I'm pretty excited about that. I really liked him in Fringe. I felt like he is a pretty good actor. I felt like it seemed like... I know. I feel like some of the skills he kind of demonstrated in that I could see like carrying over to being a good like video comic book villain.
Yeah.
So I guess the others were people they mentioned were Mike, and then I think his last name is just a sneeze. It's
Ehrmantraut? Yeah, no, you're referring to the actor's name is Jonathan Banks, who played Mike Ehrmantraut on Breaking Bad and also Better Call Saul. He's playing James Gordon.
Yes. And Scott Porter apparently is Nightwing.
Yep.
Yes.
which he is mostly just from bad romantic comedies. So I don't know too much of what his curriculum vitae is.
Right. Tara Strong is still
Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's exciting.
I know. I'm pretty excited about that. I think that sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, game's coming out in like a month.
Yep.
Yeah.
It 23rd, I think.
I'm down.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about it. It seems, I know, it seems like a lot of time, like third things in trilogies, especially since this is sort of the fourth one, end up being like we're sort of kind of running out of gas. But it's
Uncharted 3.
It's like they've actually got like really good ideas for this, and it's like actually going to be really, really good.
The fact that they took a break kind of inspires some confidence.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that resulted from the break, I haven't played it, so I can't speak to its quality. I can, you know, let Ben speak to that if he wants to, but just it doesn't seem like something that they would.
Not canon.
It is disavowed. I don't know. Like, I'm not too terribly worried about it. But then again, I haven't read too much about it.
I haven't read that much about it either. Yeah. I have complete confidence in it, but I'm going to wait until it comes out.
Yeah. Guys, we got to move on to the next section.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where this week we did a free play. Sorry if I forced that on you, Dennis. I was going to like, oh, it might be nice to do that.
No, I thought it was a good idea, and then I forgot to post it. And then you posted it, and then I posted it, and then I realized that you had posted it, and then I took down your post, but someone had commented on the post, and then I felt really bad and talked to that person, and it was okay, and it was a whole thing. But here we are.
But here we are. So I'm going to put, like, I don't know, like 20 minutes on the clock, and let's have
the person who reads the question answers the question.
Okay.
And then we'll go through that way, because God damn, did we get a lot of answers.
Yes, we did.
So, a lot of questions.
A lot of
Jeopardy.
a lot of quansers. I don't know. It is both an answer and a question.
Yeah. So like, well, most of the time they give us answers. Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. So I will go ahead and lead us out with Carlo, who writes in saying, "What's the best gamification of fitness that you've seen? For instance, Fitocracy allows you to input workouts that you've finished to get achievement points, etc. I love gaming and fitness, and I would really like to see the worlds merge." Like this is from a while ago, but like EA Sports Active was really good. Got a lot of use out of that before it just kind of got boring. Like I could see that being more successful nowadays with like a more aggressive DLC kind of thing. I don't know. Like it's one of those things where I think that the best thing for that is just like data. So the fact that wearables and smartwatches or smartphones and stuff. I've never seen one. Like I know about Fitocracy and I know about like Fitness Quest and stuff like that, but nothing has been like as interesting to me as like the Breeze app, which is put out by like the Runkeeper guys, that it isn't really a game. It's just a pedometer for your phone that keeps track of your steps and gives you like goals and gives you encouragement along the way. Like, I think that is like at that basic level, like there's not much that you need to do like to put on top of that.
Yeah, doesn't that just kill your phone's battery though? Because it always has to be running, right?
No, it's because of the I can give you the actual answer. Because of the M7 chip or whatever the mobile chip is, it does not have to always be running. This is the 5S. Yeah. So just because it has a low power way of tracking all of your movement, that is not the case. And then it just does push notifications whenever it happens.
Yeah, I think the big issue I've seen right now is that, you know, most of the gamifications and Fitbits and stuff like that can, like, track whatever type of fitness you're into as long as it's running.
Yeah.
So I hope the future answer to this question is something other than running. Mm-hmm. I know right now the zombie thing that my friends keep posting about sounds kind of badass.
Yeah. It's like Run Zombies Run or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. I also feel like some of the like Spartan runs and you know, Warrior Dash, and even in some ways, some of like CrossFit is in a lot of ways kind of gamification, even though it's not explicitly a video game.
Hey, Ben, what's Franz say?
Yeah, I'm glad you gave me this one. Different kind of games. We were looking to expand our collection of co-op board games beyond Arkham Horror. Any suggestions? So I would like to add XCOM, since we all talked about this last Woo-hoo. Week. That's a good one. Also, there's a game called Mysterium that is coming out in America soon. It was originally like a Polish game or something, but that's really good. So try checking that out.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I will second XCOM.
There's also a Pandemic. That's like a go-to as well. That's a good co-op game.
Hmm. I know nothing about these, but our listeners have them to reference. Let's see here. David, why don't you read Allison's?
Sure. Allison says, would you rather have the ability to fly but always be pooping while you were flying, or be immortal but you have to eat a bowl of your own poop once a month? Oh. I don't know. I feel like the first one, like having the poop jetpack, the poop pack. I don't know. I'm not sure that would innately be all that unpleasant for me. Or be unpleasant for everyone else.
Well, you're flying, like you're above it all, quite literally.
Right. Exactly. On the other hand, I feel like being immortal. I don't know. Like, if I'm immortal, wait, how does this work once the singularity happens and I, like, transfer my consciousness into a computer? Is it, like, digital poop?
No, I think that the body is kept alive because it's immortal, even though you are separated from it. And so it is just a husk that you have to continue to feed so that it will continue to produce poop so that it's always there.
Okay, so this is how the zombie apocalypse happens.
What do you guys think the snake eating its own tail is?
The Ouroboros?
Yeah, in myth? what do you mean? I don't understand.
In functionality.
Wait. So we're implying that this is like a human centipede if they could only hire one person?
The human Ouroboros, yeah. I don't know, like just pop on a diaper and be the pooper swooper. Like,
so I thought about that as well. I need clarification on how much poop is being generated when you're flying.
Yeah, is it like constant?
Is it manageable? Yeah, can you just wear a Depends and be good to go? Or yeah,
I mean, I think it's implied that that's a method of propulsion. I choose to interpret it that way.
Oh. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Brian say?
Brian says, what beloved but ill-treated gaming franchise would you seize directorial control over, and what would you do with it once you had? And I think I would take over the wayward Uncharted franchise and give it a proper kart racer like all Naughty Dog games deserve. We waited too long. They cannot break that cycle. It is a thing now and should be enforced.
Didn't we just get done discussing that's basically what Mad Max is?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know what a serious answer would be. I'm trying to think of a series that I have affection for that has gone off the rails.
What about Army of Two?
Oh, there it is. That is perfect. Yes, Army of Two. And I would take it right back to the over-the-top deliciousness that the first two games were.
Was there a third?
Yeah, it was called The Devil's Cartel, and it was as bland
as they come. I don't think anyone played it.
Yeah, well, it's literally like you read, and I read a lot about it because I would love Army of Two, and it's like, let's take everything great about Army of Two and just remove that and leave the most generic husk of a third-person shooter that we can. Like, literally, they got rid of the two main characters, which were half the reason that game was great, or those games were great. And then just everything about the plot was very grounded. I think they were trying to go dark and gritty with it, which it is completely misunderstanding what was good about that series. So, no, that's a very good one, David. I would definitely get Army of Two back on its crazy rails. Back on the crazy
track. Back off the rails.
Back off the rails. Yeah, damn it. There it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Basically, hire whoever writes for Saints Row. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be a good start.
Yeah. Let's see here. I will pick up with Jala, who writes in, how old were you when you started gaming? And what are some of your earliest memories of playing games? I don't, like, earliest, it would be like watching my brother play Super Mario Brothers, I guess. Like, I don't know. It's kind of hard to make it more specific than that, because most of it happened right around the time, like toward the end of the NES and toward the beginning of the SNES. So like, it's this big kind of conflation of like, okay, here I'll say this, it's like a genuine thing, like being in like preschool or kindergarten and having my grandma take me to the video store to rent Mega Man 2. Let's say that, like, that nice. is the first time that I did anything like that, that I played anything besides what was around. And like genuinely good positive memories. Before that, I'm sure I played things before that, but yeah, I would say a Mega Man 2 in my grandma's trailer. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah. So Dennis, you're gonna have to read this one because Brian specifically requested it. So.
Yeah, and it's a good question. Why don't the rest of you play Hearthstone?
I don't know, time investment. Like every time I've tried to play it. Like I play and it's like, oh, this is neat. Like I see a bunch of cool stuff here. But it doesn't bring me back. I don't know. Like I can't be bothered to open it up and play it again. Even though I think like, yes, this is something that on paper I would really like. It's just a motivation problem.
Yep. Yep.
I got nothing to lose. I'll download it.
Yeah. I was about to say, Ben, I actually think that you would like it. Cause you, have you been around Magic the Gathering much?
At the board game place I go to, there is a firm division between people who play board games and people who play Magic, but I have nothing against it.
Well, what I was going to say is Hearthstone is very much kind of like a happy-go-lucky Magic the Gathering. Like it is way more accessible and fun, and at least with my experience with Magic, it's a lot more welcoming and happy-go-lucky. But yeah, it's
much less people just blatantly screwing you over.
Yeah. But it also has a lot or just enough of that kind of like strategy and number crunching core to it that I think would appeal to the mathematician in you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So apparently it doesn't work with my phone. So can you get it on PlayStation as well?
No, it's on PC, Mac.
Okay.
Yep. David, like, why don't you play it?
I'm not sure. I feel like this is challenge accepted.
Why you put it on Breeze, dude?
No, but just like no, this is no, a weird.
I see. Like traditionally, I haven't played collectible card games just because like initial investment was too high, and I'm really governed by like gamer inertia. However, that obviously doesn't apply to a game that's completely online that has no initial investment. Mm-hmm. So there's really no reason. I'm going to get on that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, Ben, why don't you go with Sean's?
Sean says, "Would you rather have a Twitter account associated with you that everyone follows, that either posts twice daily one of the most intimate or personal thoughts you've ever had, or that posts every time you expel something from your body with the description of the material and the quantity?"
So that could get crazy. I don't want to like jump on your answer. I just want to make sure you know everything that's involved. Like this isn't just pee. Okay, what's with all the pee and poop, guys? I recognize that every show we've released for the past 2 weeks has had something to do with cum.
Yeah, I was going to say, if your most intimate and like closely hidden details involve, say, like, porn, these could be the same thing.
So, I mean, there's a lot there. There's sweat, there's pee, there's poop, there's cum, there's tears, there's sneeze. Yeah.
Yeah. Any form of mucus, right? Like, does dander count? So, and yeah. So
Wait, Jaeger?
Dander.
Or there's blood if you get in an accident, too.
Yeah. Oh, so you just like that might be a good safety measure. Okay, when the pee stops and the blood starts, everybody should call the doctor.
Yeah. How Twitter saved my life.
I'm going to go with the second option because then since it gives a description of everything that's in there, you can kind of monitor like your urine, you could monitor like your feces. This could be like healthcare.
Yeah.
Oh, the next Fitbit.
Yeah. The piss bit.
Piss bit.
There we go. That one's been answered.
And this doesn't presume that people would continue following you after they start following you. So I think that problem would fix itself.
But it's every time you make a new friend,
like the president is getting an update though on your pissing.
Sorry,
I feel like that sells the app.
Let's see here, David. What's Russell say?
Russell says, "What should I do in Vegas for my birthday? Why would you have me read this rather than the person who lives in Vegas?"
Because Ben answered the pee question.
Look, man, we all got to take one pee question.
Yeah, tapped out. Okay. All right, I need a break.
I won't jump on your answer, but I think Ben and I would say the same thing.
Yeah, I was gonna recommend Pinball Hall of Fame.
There it is.
Yeah. That is cool.
Seriously, go. It's freaking awesome.
I've never good.
Honestly, if you need ideas, send me a private message and I have a list of things to do in Vegas, so
Neat. Let's see here. I will pick up with Ryan. How do you introduce people to games? I have friends who don't really play games, but only because they never have. How do you put someone in the right mindset to start gaming? Alternatively, what's your biggest gaming shame? I've never beaten a Pokemon game, he says. I'm going to pick the first one just because I kind of like nothing really comes to mind for the shame one. I feel like I'm pretty upfront with the things that I'm ashamed of, up to and including myself.
Yeah, it's wait. But I mean, just because you're upfront about it doesn't mean you don't feel shame.
Right. It's just it's kind of like the PM poop thing. It is a signal to noise ratio. Good. Oh, okay. So I'm going to say, like, introducing people to games, honestly, like, you just play them with them, you know, and don't be a dick about it if they don't like it. Like, sometimes people just, you know, you can't force somebody to like something that that you like if they don't like it.
You know? Yeah.
Yep.
All you can do is be inclusive and approach it from a mindset of I am sharing this with you because I enjoy it and because I like you. Presumably, this is somebody you like. I would like for you to get a little bit of insight into this thing that I like as well.
Yeah, maybe a good entry point would be like survival horror games, like because that is something that you can easily watch and enjoy just as much as the person who's playing.
Yeah.
But not Five Nights at Freddy's. That's an excellent way to make sure they never play another game.
Well, maybe you're trying to clear out a party.
Yeah. I feel like that is an excellent question. Like, if you want them to enjoy the games, that's probably good. If you don't want them to, if it's someone you don't like, I feel like just, pick something from Abject Suffering.
Except, like, not all of those are bad.
Oh, well. Yeah.
Oops,
you had one job, Abject Suffering.
Well, no, like the people who recommend the games, like they had one job. Sometimes they give us one that's good. Ben, why don't you say Ungamoose
says, what game do you think / know you've spent the most time playing so far in your lives? For me, I think this is maybe a tie. I played a whole bunch of Medal of Honor in high school when I was in a clan and stuff, and so I know a lot of time was sunk into that. I've also played Coder many, many times, so that's like a good 50 hours at least for each playthrough, so that's probably up there as well.
Yeah. That is a straightforward answer.
From a straightforward man.
Yep.
I'm not going to dance around this question, Cole.
No. You provided exactly the answer he was looking for. Let's see here, David. Why don't you read what David says?
I see, typecasting me.
Yep, as a David.
A fellow David says, can you make us a level drinking game, then demonstrate on air?
Can I answer that for you?
I feel like this one's going to take some thought.
Well, like us making a drinking game of ourselves is a little bit douchey, I think.
Isn't that kind of how drinking games roll?
Well...
it depends on how drunk he wants to get.
Yeah, well, I think that's like a matter of like balancing or tuning. But I don't want to aside from that little sketch we did at the beginning of episode 100. Like, I don't want to come in and say like take a sip every time Ben says spoiler or something like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's something fans do, and you guys can collaborate on it and put it forward.
I would say that
will make us too aware of it, and then we'll start manipulating it to get everyone super wicked
drunk.
That's
true. That's true. Yeah. I would say every time I show indecisiveness, take a drink. If you, that would be. Yeah,
if it's bad. If it's self-depreciating, can we submit things?
Yeah. No, I think even that. Like, yeah.
I was gonna say, yeah.
It's like that can be a fan project, but I don't want us to start getting that self-aware.
Sure.
Oh, Dennis, what's Evan say?
Oh, I'm glad I got this one. He asked, do you guys like John Carpenter movies? And I can honestly say I'm not sure I'm familiar with John or his movies about carpentry. So
really,
I forced you to watch The Thing.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, The Thing. Well, then I like them. I like The Thing. I've seen that then. And yes, it is extremely good.
Yeah, yeah, but then jump.
You didn't force him to see The Ghost of Mars, which is not good.
No, jumping back to what will likely be a pre-roll, maybe. Yeah, the thing is my one thing for the one horror movie I will watch.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
Alan agrees with me about The Ghost of Mars. Yeah, good on you.
Yeah, The Thing is great.
I love that this, and the people who are listening who didn't see the Facebook page can't see this stuff, but like every question almost has some kind of conversation about it under it in like the replies. So
yeah,
that is encouraging. Yeah,
they're all epic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go and take a look at that if you want to extend the conversation. Yeah. I'm going to pick up with Alan. Alan says, do you get more out of gaming now that there is so much more content but not as much time to play? Or was gaming better when you were kids and and your access to content was limited, but you had the time to master games? Like, it depends on your definition of kid, honestly. Like, I don't know. Like,
Cole had no childhood. He was born an old man.
Yeah, yes. I have Jack disease, but it's mental. Yeah, I don't know. Like I kind of like having a breadth of experiences, you know. So it's less, obviously, it's less important for me to finish things. I kind of like the scarcity that's kind of brought into it around like the time to really like dive into stuff. But like, it's kind of cool being an adult and having the resources and kind of living in this kind of like age where you can pick up games for, you know, a couple bucks a piece, to experience as much as possible. And, you know, even if it is a very superficial read on it, I think that I like that better. You know,
it seems to me like there's maybe a little bit of difference between like playing a game versus gaming, whereas like maybe playing a game as a kid was better. Like I probably in some ways enjoyed the games I played more. On the other hand, I really love now gaming, and like I really love watching Let's Plays, and like whatever random video game I want, I can watch someone explain to me why this is the best game ever made, and that makes me very happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess I don't draw that distinction.
Maybe. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. And that is time. Oh, I should have silenced the phone before the timer went off.
Oh, that was a nice chime.
Yeah. Sorry for everybody that we didn't hit with that. And thank you so much for contributing. I need to find a way to bank these for later times. But yeah, we really appreciate it. If you want to be a part of the conversation, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast where you can throw in on those on Tuesday afternoons.
The Grind.
And now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week or so. Dennis, since you were not here last time, I will throw to you first.
Yeah, I picked up and played Killzone Mercenary, which is cool. the big kind of first-person shooter for the Vita. And I got it for free through PlayStation Plus, of course, because that's how I get everything I freaking play. But I've really, really enjoyed it. And I'm, I guess, happily surprised after a fashion to say this is a first-person shooter that completely stands on its own merits, regardless of what console it's on. And I could very easily see this game being ported as is to PlayStation 3 or PlayStation 4 or any other console, and it feeling right at home. Like the twin thumbsticks on the Vita work incredibly well. The visuals, I was amazed how good they are for such a small machine working on theoretically limited power. But it's a very I won't call it a pretty game because it's kind of your fairly standard first person shooter fare. no really inspired environments to be found. But what's there is, you know, looks good. So that's really cool. So it's pretty interesting.
So when I saw you tweet about this, I kind of thought, wait, really?
About the Intel.
Well, yeah, I saw this. Less about, I want you to explain the Intel thing because I didn't quite get it. I saw you bring it up and it's like, okay, I got that on PSN, but like I kind of disregarded it because I thought this was one of those ones that was going to be garbage. No, this isn't the garbage one. It was the Resistance and Call of Duty games that were garbage.
Yeah, this is the
this
rare
is the good
one. Yeah, this is the good one. It feels really good, and like I said, I'm after having played this, and I've played the bad ones, right? I played Unit 13 or whatever it was, and probably gave that game way more good grace than it deserved, because now I've seen like you can do a really competent shooter on the Vita, and it surprises me that no one else has been able to do it this well. Mm-hmm. So first off, kudos to whatever team developed it. I'm not sure if it was the main Killzone team or an offshoot. Maybe this was Ready at Dawn. I'm not sure.
This is Guerrilla Cambridge. They mostly have done. Oh, they did the Frog Report for PlayStation, or the Frogger update for PlayStation.
Oh, big
time! But their big kind of like title that people probably remember the most fondly for is Medieval and Medieval 2. The cool skeleton platformer game for the PlayStation.
Yeah, sir, whatever his name is, it's in PlayStation All-Stars.
Yeah. But they also like did a bunch of like high profile ports, not a bunch, I guess, but they did like the little Big Planet port for PSP.
Gotcha.
Oh, that could explain maybe some of how they're able to do that if they're kind of the people that have mastered this system.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is that the places where it feels limited are kind of small. So the loading screens are longer, but the way that they do that is like the intro cutscenes, and it's more like, you know, you're like watching a computer screen with information popping up on it. So animatic, I guess, is a better way to describe it. That kind of sets up the plot and the story and why you're doing what you're doing is what runs over the loading screen. And just normally where you'd be able to skip that video right away if you wanted, you kind of have to watch it for a while everything loads. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit slower. The other thing, and I'm not sure if this is a capacity concession for the Vita or if it's a design choice. You can only have two weapons at a time, but you're not able to pick up weapons off of random fallen colleagues. Instead, there's an arms dealer that has kind of little mini shops set up all over the levels. Mm-hmm. You know, there's kind of one in between every big combat theater that you can kind of stop in and either buy new weapons or re-equip old weapons for a small fee.
Game's set in Texas.
Yeah, pretty much. But you choose, okay, for this upcoming area, here are the two weapons I'm going to use. And you're kind of locked into that until you finish that area, unless you want to like backtrack or restart in some way, which usually your respawn point, if you die, is right next to one of these machines. So it's not too invasive. But it does take away your ability to kind of improvise and pick up weapons from enemies on the fly. And because of that, all ammo types are just one thing. It's like an ammo unit that can be applied towards whatever you're holding. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that was a design choice or if there was some sort of limitation. It would seem like a strange limitation to me. But everything else, like the areas that you're fighting in, don't feel small compared to what I've seen on other systems. Mm-hmm. There's a good mix of outdoor and indoor combat. And like I said, the graphics hold up really well. So it's an impressive game to say the least. Go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
I was gonna say, and it's got some really unique ideas on Intel, which I can get to.
Mm-hmm. I just kind of want to ask like a basic principles question before we get into that, because you praised it on Twitter and I kind of want to hear more. Controlling it. So like my PS Vita came with a download code for Borderlands 2, right?
Okay,
and I played around with it a little bit, like, oh, recognized, yeah, I probably still don't want to play this game. but kind of doing the twin stick first person shooter control felt a little bit unwieldy. Is that just something that you have to get used to, or do they have some kind of optimization in Mercenary that makes it, you know, kind of more successful?
It was good enough to where I actively thought, like, oh, this is working really well, much better than I've felt it work in other shooting games that I've played. So I'm not sure what the difference is. It just might be that this team has found the perfect feel for the controls. It might be a little tighter than other games in that you turn a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. As I'm thinking about the other shooters I've played on the system. So maybe that has something to do with it, that you're sacrificing a little bit of ability to kind of whip around. Mm-hmm. But then when you are actually trying to focus and hit a target, it feels much more doable.
Yeah. So talk to me about Intel. Explain this system to me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I would have never thought of it on my own, but then once I saw it, I'm like, I can't believe that this isn't just the standard way that everyone does it, because it's such a good idea. Instead of having, like, hidden briefcases or laptops or documents or whatever random item that people stash throughout the levels and we're supposed to be excited to find for more storytelling in the game. Mm-hmm. Killzone Mercenary just designates officers, and there are officers throughout the levels. Pretty much like each area has an officer in it somewhere, which makes sense diegetically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also diegetically, the officer would know something that other people didn't. Yep. He would have intel. And so that, you know, there's no collectibles to be messed with. It's these officers that show up on your map. They kind of have an extra little rank symbol over them. And if you can sneak up behind them and grab them, you can interrogate them. which the execution of this is a little bit clumsy. It irons out to be a quick time event. but that getting to them and being able to interrogate them without someone else seeing you is what will unlock the intelligence, which is really, really cool. Because normally, at least the way I play games, I completely ignore intelligence. I can completely ignore the collectibles until, you know, like if it's a game that I really like and I want the platinum, I'll use a guide to go through and find it.
Yeah.
Even like the treasure in Uncharted was a pain in the ass to go hunt down. Like just really, really annoying and didn't fit.
Had no use for the rest of the game.
Yeah, it was dumb. But this is like, okay, I'm going to be in this area anyway. I need to fight these guys anyway. And there's probably some value in me trying to be stealthy at least for a little bit. And so giving me this extra objective of like, hey, if you can get really far behind the lines without anyone seeing you and can manage to catch this guy when he's in this one room, then you get this little extra bit of story as a reward. And it varies. Like some of them are really cool. So like one of the pieces of intel, you're like blowing up this power plant that's the only one of its kind, and your intel is the schematics or like information on how to build this, which is really valuable since you're destroying the only one in existence.
Yeah.
Or another is like a letter from the officer home to his wife, which is really interesting. So it's not always well executed. Some of it is just dumb, random information. But it's a really cool idea on how they give it to you completely within the world of the game that I like and I wish I saw more places.
Yeah.
Cool. I just want to throw out that they do this in Metal Gear Solid Snake or Snake Eater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that my secret shame is I've never played a Metal Gear game, so.
Yeah. So I forget how it articulates in Snake Eater. I remember in 2 you got dog tags, right? And those were collectibles. Mm-hmm. Was there any like story or gameplay benefit to doing this?
In Snake Eater, you can interrogate any person.
Yes.
This is like one of the ways that you can interact with them. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that the information they give you is as valuable as it seems like they're making it in Killzone.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like this is like really important, and not, I guess not important, otherwise it wouldn't be optional, but it is very effective world building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never felt like I missed out because I killed an officer instead of interrogating him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're definitely like that's another compliment I can pay the game is that it has a really good balance between stealth and going loud.
Nice.
To where, you know, like it's a very kinetic game. It rewards you moving around a lot. And whether you're doing that kind of secretively trying to stay out of people's lines of sight or whether you're just trying to bounce around knifing people while they try to kill you, both of those feel good and are fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I got into the game further, It was this kind of like, I'll stealth while it's convenient. I will try to get to the officer, but if things go south, I don't feel like I need to restart the area. I can just play and have fun shooting people with my shotgun as much as I would sneaking past them.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Does it continue Killzone's weird, like, we're going to pseudo lift our plot from World War II thing?
I was thinking about that. I don't know. It definitely has the whole, like, you know, it's still in the same universe, so yes. Sure. But the story is much more about, like, hey, there's a bioweapon that, you know, one side has the actual virus, the other side has the key to activate it, and you're kind of getting played between both sides as they both vie for control of it, and both of the people in charge would use it on the other. So it's like, it's played off as a they are equally bad.
So it's like Myst?
Yeah, a little bit. But it does feel a little bit weird that you kind of start out fighting alongside the ISA, which are the traditional good guys. And then, you know, the one director leading the ISA, the Admiral, turns out to be a bad guy. Therefore, it's suddenly okay to turn around and start shooting all of her underlings.
Bring me red launch codes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's that is a bit weird. It does feel less connected to history and more just kind of its own thing.
Sure.
Which is fine. You know, it's the story is just passable enough to be like, oh yeah, I remember shooter stories. It motivates me or tells me why I'm doing the next thing. My motivation comes from it's fun to play.
Yeah.
So what's my motivation in this scene?
Yeah. I mean, so like that little wrinkle, like the way they handle item pickups, I feel like that probably is a concession to pacing. It sounds like they really want to control, you know, your ability to kind of change things, change up the way that you're playing on the fly. And like, it almost sounds like that is in line with the, kind of the tighter or less, not like less snappy, but like kind of like more deliberate controls. Like that sounds like something that they're probably like, it doesn't seem like something that would arise from a technical limitation.
I think that makes sense. Again, it would be a weird technical limitation to have. The downside is that it winds up where it's like, okay, I'm going to try using a sniper rifle. Oops, I chose wrong. This next area is entirely like close quarters. There's nothing to tell you what you're about to go into.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
sucks.
It's hard. I found myself kind of finding a primary and a secondary that are relatively versatile and that I like, and just sticking with those no matter what.
Yeah.
Learn the no scope, noob.
Yeah.
Yes, get good.
Pretty much. It is kind of nice. You use the rear touch screen of the Vita to increase or decrease scope zoom, mm-hmm. which just feels really good.
You scope your zoom.
Yeah, scope your zoom.
Zoom gate.
It's brown so it can blend into the background. Yeah.
Yeah, weirdly the kill zone like timeline is this alternate history where zooms were way more popular than iPods. And you get a lot of intel about that.
So it's like the butterfly effect, you know.
Yeah, it's a weird decision for them to make. I think there was a sponsorship involved, but
yeah, what people don't know is that Children of Men is an alternate future where Betamax won out over VHS. It's a subtle distinction, but it's there.
Well, no, the research shows that Betamax would have all given us cancer that would have kept us from having kids. So
yeah.
I'm continually shocked by how much mileage we get out of some of this stuff.
out of what stuff?
Some of these asides.
David, what you don't understand. Well, that's a dickish, condescending way to say it, but I just want to underline, this is entirely the way that I make my living. At work, I trick people into thinking I'm valuable and creative by perpetuating these exact same kinds of asides. Like it is literally a survival mechanism for me.
And here we see the coal in his native environment.
It appears that he is prevaricating. Okay. Notice how he drags everybody off topic so he can look smart when he gets them back on. Oh man, I am a fraud.
Hey now.
Any other kind of like standout things? Like, do you see yourself taking this one through for the long haul?
I see myself taking this into multiplayer. That's okay. The one thing I haven't touched yet, and I'm very curious to see how that goes. One, if there's anyone playing it, and then two, if it feels as good playing against real opponents as it does against enemies that are computer controlled.
Mm-hmm. Have you dipped into it? Like, do you know what the like how the matchmaking situation looks?
Nah, I haven't touched it yet. So it is built around this idea of you're a mercenary and everything you do can either earn you or lose you money. Okay. So like literally when you die, you're charged a life insurance fee. When you
how life insurance works.
Not at all. When you switch weapons,
when people buy the zone.
when you switch weapons, like the vendor charges you a fee to swap out the equipment, even if you've already bought that weapon before. So like, it's
Dust 513 or whatever.
Yeah, I would say it's some kind of weird comment on capitalism, but I don't think they thought about it that much. I would expect that whole everything costs money plays into the multiplayer. But I don't know how, and I'll let you know next week.
Okay. Cool. So Ben, I'm going to throw off to you.
Yeah, so I only have one. I haven't played Alien Isolation at all this week, but I did pick up a new game yesterday as my official filler game between now and Batman, and it's Far Cry 4.
Mm. So
I installed it last night, and then 10 minutes later I beat it. So I don't know whether or not to dip back in it or not.
Yeah, that's...
But it was pretty good, you know. Yeah, room environments. So
it's a little bit not The Witness. That looks like a really good game. Like any of those Tale of Tales games, like it's like The Path or whatever, where you're just kind of like sitting in a room waiting for somebody to come back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, real cerebral. I liked it.
It is a bold new direction for the for the series.
So wait, is it short? Did I not realize that the game is like?
Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute. What is the joke we're making here? I'm not following.
There's an option to beat the game in 10 minutes. Where at the beginning of the game, you meet the bad guy, and there's one part where he's like, "Hey, stay in this room. I gotta go do something. I'll come back." And if you wait 10 minutes, he comes back, and then you beat the game.
It's like, hey, you want to go shoot guns?
Yeah. And they play Should I Stay or Should I Go to cap it off. So there you go.
Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I will probably continue playing it in earnest tonight. But I just picked it up yesterday. So far, it is okay.
I love it. I love the opening. Particularly the introduction of Min is pretty well done.
Yeah. I don't quite know what to think of them so far, but yeah, it seems like that's the common theme of the last three games that they've made is they do have a very interesting antagonist who's either crazy or smart or both. And yeah.
He basically ends up being a kind of a much more, I guess, genuine version of Handsome Jack.
Okay, genuine in what way?
Genuine meaning like kind of handsome.
You're saying
Jack's...
it like it's the name of the R&B singer. Say genuine, please.
What?
I'll keep it going.
Okay. I'm sorry. You're pronouncing that word weird.
Okay, I'm sorry. Handsome Jack, like some of his joke is just the fact that. That he's fairly blatantly just kind of, that none of the stuff he does, he actually believes, just that he's kind of smarmy and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas Pig and Min's basically the exact same character if he believed his own publicity.
Mm. I see. Okay.
Handsome Jack's kind of a psychopath that randomly calls you to, pretend like he's giving you, useful life advice. Mm. Whereas Pig and Min is basically a psychopath that randomly calls you to legitimately try to give you useful life advice.
All right.
So are you having fun with it? I mean, like the real ending of the game aside, like the optional content after the credits.
I've literally played it 10 minutes. So. I will have more to report back later, but yeah, that's it. That's all I have for now.
Okay. Cool. Well, yeah, let's let us circle back on that. Let's put a pin in it before we open the kimono. David, how about you? Also, be sure you're speaking to the microphone. And also, I ordered you guys microphone stands. So those should be arriving David on Thursday and Ben on Friday.
Oh, thank you.
So, David, continue.
I feel like I need like the Clockwork Orange take on microphone stand where they just like strap my head in to the right distance from the mic.
Well, that would be a headset microphone.
Wasn't there a pitch episode about this? Yeah. The throat mic?
Yeah. Yep. No, man, I forget the pleasure throat. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So yeah, go ahead, David.
I actually haven't been playing a whole lot. I've kind of been busy with the job hunt stuff. So I'm trying to think. I've kind of been continuing on with Good Wars 2, but it's mostly been just like kind of some of the fringe things. So there's you know, kind of it being an MMO, it's got a lot of kind of the side, like, you know, there's different achievements. So there's like one for drinking all the different types of beer in the game. Mm-hmm. So I've been like going around and, you know, buying up all the types of beer, you know, stuff like that. So it's kind of been more side things. I don't know. The angry cat people continue to be charming. Trying to think. Actually, the only other thing that's kind of interesting, just because this is apparently so common, is I've started a guild simply so that I can have myself be the only member and open up a guild bank.
Okay.
And apparently that's just something everyone does because the game does a horrible job of giving you enough inventory space.
Huh. Okay.
So, I think part of it is, you know, this game, you know, really, really doubles down on it's the, you know, it's not, I don't know what they call it. It's not freemium because it's not free. Excuse me, I'm sorry. It's not freemium because it's not free, but it's, you know, you pay a price and then you can play for free.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same model like Guild Wars 1 had. Like, they're just not...
Well, yeah, yeah.
Are you guys just talking about a straight subscription model? Because that's the easier way to say it.
No, like, the subscription. The way they fund, like, the way that they funded Guild Wars, and I guess Guild Wars 2 as well, rather than charging people per month for free content, quote unquote, like as they put out, you know, new dungeons or whatever, like WoW does, you continue to play for free forever. But if you want the new content, you pay for it.
See, oh, okay.
So it's a free base game. Go ahead.
You actually don't pay for the new content. Like, there is an expansion coming up, but like main time, like monthly new dungeons and stuff, you actually don't pay for.
Oh, that's weird. That's like exactly not what they did with the first one.
Right, but the big thing is they have a lot of, like, they have the freemium shop, and in particular, there's a lot of, like, a la carte, so, like, you can, you know, increase the size of your bank account,
mm-hmm.
Or your bank slots, or, like, increase the number of bags you can sell,
mm-hmm.
Or
hold.
I mean, there's a good chance also you can increase the amount you can, you know, sell.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I know it's interesting. It's kind of their economy with that in terms of like their money making thing. It really kind of like you know, skates the edge or whatever, to mix my metaphors, of, you know, on the one hand, they give you a crap ton of stuff for free. On the other hand, it does sometimes seem a little abusive in terms of, like, how limited your inventory is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, if they're taking away valuable stuff and then selling it back to you, well, I guess I just answer my own question because it's valuable, so people are going to pay to get it. But, like, I don't know.
It always, and this is such a weird place to be in, because everything in digital is this way, but artificial scarcity is such a sticky kind of subject. Like, it would be really easy for them to increase the number of inventory slots. That doesn't cost anyone any extra money. Like, there's no investment there. And yet, they're limiting it. You know, like, and that's within their rights. That's how they want to do their model. It sounds like they're doing a lot of other stuff well. That's fine, but it will never quite feel right to have things artificially limited like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're monetizing opportunity cost at that point. Like, yes, they could do it for free. They could flip that, but doing so costs them potential revenue. And so you get down to a situation where, like, oh, it might actually be costing a public establishment money, you know, not charging $5 to go into the restroom. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. The other thing I feel like is, to a certain degree, I like this because it seems like it's kind of you choose your buy-in. So, like, you know, if you're, you know, someone who's really into this and is competitive, well, actually, if you're competitive, most of that, you can't buy an advantage in PvP. Mm-hmm. But so, you know what I mean? If you're really into the game, you're going to spend all this money. On the other hand, if you're someone who, like, you play because your significant other plays or something, mm-hmm. then, you know, you don't need to do this.
Yeah.
And I sort of like that. You know, I feel like, I think I've made this analogy before, but, you know, it seems kind of like sports, like, you know, like the CrossFit stuff where, you know, like, I just go and participate and, like, it's a thing, whereas there's other people that go and, like, buy, like, $500 weightlifting shoes. And it's, like, completely, you know, what is your level of commitment?
Yeah.
Which I think kind of seems like a better way to do it than just being like, you either pay us monthly or you don't get to play.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, my opinion is I'd much rather have that predictable thing because, I don't know. Like, I'm not a person who plays MMOs, so it's hard for me to have a non-disingenuous opinion about that. But sure. I think that I would much rather just subscribe and then get whatever, you know, like get the full experience, you know, and have, like, not as many of those kind of basic things be charged because that just is something that goes on my credit card that I can ignore. Sure. You know, in like a weird kind of way, whereas in the model that you're describing, what happens is every time you run up against that, that is like a little bit of a commerce confrontation, right?
Sure.
Like, you know, where you're like more conscious of it, you know, even though you may be able to play for, you know, overall less money than you would, you know, have to put in a monthly subscription. It definitely feels like more just because it, you know, it's more frequent than just kind of checking your credit card statement once a month and thinking, oh, this, I'm still like a part of this thing. Okay, I guess.
Yeah, true. Although I will say in its defense, just to make sure I don't misrepresent this game, like most of the important things are one-time purchases.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a lot of them are things where, you know, it'll be like, you know, hey, normally you have to, like, buy axes to, you know, gather materials and they degrade over time. And it's a, you know, it's a trivial gold sink, but, you know, still is a gold sink.
Yep.
Whereas you can pay, like, I think it's the equivalent of, like, $10. And, like, get one that, like, never degrades and, you know, can, you know, mine any quality of tree.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Like, that sounds gross to me on its surface, but I can't say exactly why.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping to pick up a game soon, but no, I've got nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So mine's going to be easy. I haven't played shit that I can talk about, really.
The Level, a podcast for people who sometimes play video games.
Yeah. Well, I feel like garbage about that, but like everything is just kind of like happening at once. So I'm very sorry. that I have failed you guys.
I wasn't here last week, so
yeah. But like this past weekend, it was a weekend off. My family was going to come down to hang out for Mother's Day, but they weren't able to because of health stuff. So I had it, but it's like we have some stuff coming down the pike for Watch Out for Fireballs that is going to be very time intensive.
Okay,
and so I not only had to beat Super Metroid, but also I spent all Sunday beating Katamari Damacy, so I can, move on to this other kind of more time intensive stuff. So that's the honest answer. I've been playing video games, but it's stuff for other shows. So I feel like I'm shortchanging the show for that other stuff. But
I like how your second job is playing video games.
Yeah. I'd like it to be my first one, but
have you looked into making that a thing?
Slowly but surely.
Gosh. I think you're on it.
Yeah, you're making me sad. So I will proceed to say that's really about it. I got a couch.
Nice.
That's cool. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
You got a couch in Katamari Damacy?
Yeah, or? Yeah. I rolled up about 10,000 of them. They're up there on the moon with all the tornadoes and squid. No. I just the supplier, the store dicked me around on the shipping. So it's like, okay, we're gonna deliver on Saturday, and then it got to be Thursday, and they're like, I call them, hey, are you guys still gonna do that? And they're like, it's gonna be Tuesday. That was delayed. They didn't apologize, which upset me a lot. And I'm like, when were you guys going to tell me that? It's like, well, you get an automated call the day, 2 days before. I'm like, that's 2 days. Like, today's 2 days. Yeah. So it's like, okay, Tuesday. What time? Well, we give you a 2-hour window. Like, okay, well, but what's a 2-hour window? Well, the computer allots that. I'm like, well,
I don't know why I have a job. The computer does everything.
Yeah,
please,
yeah.
It's, help me. I'm trapped here. It won't let me go.
I'm trapped in a warehouse. Help. It's nothing but couches and robots. No. I'm like, okay, well, I have a job. So Tuesday, so this morning, I had to hang around the house and fend off phone calls as I watched these guys carry this couch up these stairs.
Did they at least not visibly drop it or break it in some way?
They didn't break it, which is more than can be said for the last couch. So the last couch was broken on arrival, and so I got it for free. Yeah, but it's a cool couch. It's got like the ends recline and shit.
So, oh, nice.
Yeah. I've also
Will it make you a more effective gamer?
I don't know. I don't want to call myself a gamer. It's nice. Like, I've got it all set up real good. It's gonna be comfortable. If I'm gaming, I'm in a recliner. If I'm napping, it's on a couch. So yeah, it's cool. I've also been gardening, but I think I'm just slowly killing plants. So I'm paying money I'm paying money for the privilege of watching something die outside my window.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Air plants, the way to go.
What?
Air plants?
Is that like the boring sequel to Air Bud? There's nothing in the rules that says a rhododendron can't play basketball.
No. Air plants are these plants that basically just need water and sunlight.
Oh yeah, I mean like houseplants. Like, oh, my indoor plants, like that game on point. I got a creeping ficus hanging from a hook in my living room. Like, that one's fine. Like,
okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about the flowers and stuff that I have in my patio.
So as long as the plant isn't in its natural environment, it's cool.
Yeah, but I've got a dahlia plant that's like wilting and dying. all of the petals fell off, and there's some buds that are coming in. I just, maybe it's like repotting stress. I'm not really sure. The level of podcast about botany, I guess.
About poor botany, please.
Yeah. My mint is not looking very healthy. It's not really standing up. The cilantro is getting kind of sparse, and the leaves are getting a little bit crispy on the edges. And then the seed pods that I got for basil and stuff are very slowly coming in. So I have to watch them be born slowly before I watch them die quickly.
Well, I mean, with herbs, it's kind of tricky because you have to make sure you put them in on time.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah, it's on THYME. Yeah. So I guess more accurately, it's been like catching up on a lot of stuff, but also like getting my house in order, which involves cool things like, a couch and some plants. Cool.
Uber.
You guys want to button it up?
Let's do it.
Yeah, so that was episode number 104 of The Level. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah, I'm trying to think of any like business stuff. The soundtrack showdown is going to be over by the time that happens. Some very strange choices are being made as we speak. I keep it open and I'm like, really, you voted for that?
But is it like a send Bieber to Alaska kind of deal?
Maybe. I think people are just trying to like stress me out. but yeah.
So it's like gaslighting, except if it was explicit.
Yeah, it's just that like the there are some things that I expect and there's some things that I don't expect, and there are some things that I'm disappointed about, which are that the final four has come down to three JRPGs. Womp. Oh,
what's
well.
What's the non-JRPG?
Super Metroid.
Oh.
Yeah. So
well, you know all about that.
Yeah, because I played it and talked about it for 4 hours. Yeah. Are you okay?
Ooh, that sounded bad.
That sounded like permanent damage.
Both a glass and a beer bottle.
Oh, God. Well, let's finish up so you can go attend
double
to that.
He's wrecking shit.
I knocked a empty beer bottle off the table in which it landed on a glass and broke it.
Huh. Maybe that could be the level drinking game.
just break stuff.
Yeah, just throw bottles at the wall. Yeah, so you know the usual stuff. There's the Facebook, which we mentioned earlier. There is the Amazon link at duckfeed.tv/chipjar. That really helps us out. You go buy stuff on Amazon, like those microphone stands I just bought, and we get a kickback from it. And yeah, the usual stuff. iTunes ratings and reviews, and telling friends. I would like to go because I still have a lot of work to do tonight before I go to bed. I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on the Twitter.
And I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around to hear us have a short discussion about the title. Yep, I'm just going to rattle these off real quick for you. Got three of them, okay? Mm-hmm. Body humor.
How's it spelled?
It's B-O-D-Y space H-U-M-O-R. Okay. Dry World.
That one might be up there.
Okay. Red Dead Businessman.
There it is.
Okay. There we go. That is the winner.